Welcome to another episode of This Silly with the Hooligans. Mitch, Brad.
Hello.
Bird.
All right.
No guests because, well, they're all in Portlandia.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Yeah.
So, well, I think as of last note, they were driving through Tacoma.
They're in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Where they played last night against Seattle Sounders 2.
Before we get there, though, they had another game since our last podcast. They played Tulsa at home.
Fine, be that way.
Well, I mean, we should do it in chronological order, don't you think?
It was a Segway.
Oh, sorry.
Not one of those stupid motorized bike Segways.
I'd like one of those, though.
The
podcast should get those.
No. No, we should not. If we're getting anything, we need a golf cart.
All right. You talk about whatever you want, Mitch.
No, too late.
All right.
You've ruined my flow.
Sorry. Let's talk about Tulsa. We had a 3-2 win over the Tulsa Roughnecks. Fun game. Again, another one where we jumped out to the lead early on.
And decisively.
And
I'm nodding my head like that makes good podcast.
Yeah. I don't think the 3-2 scoreline is indicative of how much we owned that game.
I saw the stats, and Tulsa had a fair amount of the ball.
Yeah.
A fair amount of the pass. They had more passes. They had more of the ball. They had more shots. I'd like to know what the shots on target were.
Yeah.
But I came away.
I've noticed they haven't been putting that up in the stats.
But I know I came away from that game thinking, you know what? 3-2 flattered Tulsa.
Yeah.
You know, it was 3-1 up until right at
the death. Yeah, they got one late.
But I felt leaving the game that we battered them.
Yeah, and I mean, Wallfall had a good game.
When doesn't Wallfall have a good game?
Excellent point, my friend. Lewis Hilton had a good game.
Which is a regular occurrence as of late, too.
Yeah, and the defense really did, too. I mean, yeah, they gave up 2 goals, but like Matt said, one was towards the very end of the game. I don't know, not a lot to say. Tulsa's a team we should beat.
Correct.
And we did.
Yep.
Well, I unfortunately wasn't there, so I had to watch bits and pieces on TV and then watch the whole thing the next day. And having that outside view of it, I guess, I felt like it should have been like 5-1. Like, it just was a consistent barrage for a while.
Yeah.
And I think someone on Twitter, it might have been Chris Freeman, it might have been Cake with a J, but they were saying, you know, Tulsa had more of the ball, they had more possession, they had more passes, but under Preki, so did we.
It could have been like that.
You know, when we're pushing forward and attacking and taking risks and trying to create opportunities, you're going to lose the ball. You're going to have wayward passes. Yeah. You're going to have things bounce the wrong way. So
they did a lot of knocking around in
but,
the back third.
But I'm also, you know, having listened to a couple of Ant's post-game press conferences, he's still working with these guys. He's still trying to get them to do a full game. You know what I mean? He's always happy with one half or the other. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's okay that we're not the finished product yet. We're building towards that, you know, hopefully by the time playoffs roll around, if we're still in the right position, then we can start putting full games together and finishing these out.
Don't get me wrong. I wasn't sitting there complaining. I would much rather our midfield take a chance, take a risk, you know, and try and make something work than take the safe option. You don't score through taking the safe option. You score through taking a chance, and you know, 9 times out of 10 you may lose the possession, it may go out for a throw-in or whatever, but that one time may lead to something special.
And we can move into the Seattle game now, Mitch.
No.
Taking a chance is something that was missing in that game, I think.
Yeah, I thought first half especially, we played really well.
Especially the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
We were just balls out.
Lately, we've been starting off right, which is telling me Ant's got a message, Ant's got a plan, and they go out and attack, and they follow it, and it's been good.
And it was no surprise when Kyle eventually scored, although it should have been 3-0 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Then they equalized at the back end of the first half, and we came out, I thought we came out kind of sluggish first 20 minutes. Seattle brought the game to us, we kind of lost our way. But then the last 25 minutes, we put our stamp on the game again, and there was only going to be one winner, but we just ran out of time eventually. It's kind of, I don't mind drawing, but having had 66% of the game in our favor to come away with a point is, you know, it's funny, right? Because I'm coming here the day after the game thinking it's going to be all downbeat, how we should have won that game, but we're going to talk about getting 4 points in.
Yeah.
6 out of 6 in the last 2 games, and you can't sniff at that.
Well, and I mean, immediately after the game, you know, people online are grousing a bit because, I mean, Seattle is down in the standings. But how many times have we said...
Seattle's at home. That's the other thing. They do well at home.
And they're a good team. I mean, they're not a good team wins and losses, but they've got talent.
Yes.
The guy on the right side for a while was just blowing past Tony Walls. I mean, like, you could see that guy was a gamer.
Well, and I mean, you know, I just like to tell people, hey, Toronto 2 rolled Louisville.
Yeah.
It happens. It's, you know.
Toronto 2 rolled Louisville.
I know, it's great, isn't it? but 1 point on the road.
It's almost like hiring a youth coach gets you youth coach results.
But 1 point on the road, not the end of the world.
Wait a minute. Let's ignore our first two seasons when you make that statement.
But it does put a little pressure on us coming into Portland and Reno.
I do agree.
I think we have to win at least one of those two games.
I agree. I was looking for 4 points out of this road trip. Optimistically, I was looking for 4 points. I'd rather win one and lose one.
Yeah.
Obviously.
And obviously you'd think it would be the other way around. You would think Seattle would have been the easier touch, but...
You know, stranger things have happened.
You got to go play.
You know, I still maintain that this team plays up to its opposition.
Yeah.
And we can...
So if we steal three in Portland... Everything's fine.
Everything's fine anyway, right?
Well,
right.
No, I mean, you're right.
But even going back, the old soccer saying is win at home, draw on the road.
Right.
You know, I mean.
But like I said, I think we have to get one win.
My emotional side says that's not good enough.
Yeah.
But the logistic mind says, well, that's what you're supposed to do.
We have lost one game in eight.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So,
that's phenomenal. But what this team and this club has gone through in the last 3 years. To be able to sit here now and say, we have lost one game in eight and won six of them.
Yeah.
Or won five of them. It is just cloud nine stuff.
I'll take it all day long. We do need to take care of business.
But we're taking care of business. But also, you look at some of the other teams around us, they're kind of scrabbling for wins. We're going out playing confidently.
Yeah.
And the Swopes, even though Swope and San Antonio won midweek, they've not been, you know.
Yeah.
We've lost one in eight. They're winning two in eight, you know, and that's what I'm looking at too.
Well, and to the point that I said these next two games are so important, it's because Reno and Portland are right ahead of us. So it's a big swing if we can win those games.
Correct, and I think Reno's going to come here looking for something.
They're gunning for it.
Yeah, they want some revenge.
So it's going to be fun. Saturday night we'll be at... Kirkwood Station. That game is going to be ESPN Plus only. So if you don't have ESPN Plus, you can always join us at Kirkwood Station to watch the game. And then Reno at home on the 8th is going to be another big game. We need a bunch of people to come out to the park and have some fun.
Should be a good game. I mean, they can play, and you know, we can play too.
Both teams need it. So they'll be going full out.
And we're looking at now. We're almost. Pretty much to a healthy roster now.
Yeah.
Austin put in another 20 minutes last night.
Barden's the only one that's officially out.
Right. I mean, and considering where we were a month and a half ago, where we had six guys out.
Oh, yeah. It shows. The results show that we're getting healthy.
They absolutely do. Yeah. They absolutely do. And it's great to see Austin back in there getting touches and, you know, getting running. You know, he's going full force. He's back at it. I mean, obviously, I'm sure he doesn't feel like he's 100%, but... Seattle didn't know that last night the way he went at them.
Yeah. Let's mention Charity du Jour. Last time at home, we had a special Charity du Jour for the St. Louis Area Food Bank. Our ownership group, including Jim Cavanaugh and Tom Strunk, they decided to buy Sugar Fire for the tailgate. it was very good, and Mitch just grunted his approval.
No, I grunted my disapproval of not
having
it.
Oh, because you weren't there. That's right. I forgot.
I did have salt and smoke that night, though.
Okay. Kirkwood Station also provided some liquid refreshments. So
as they do.
All of the donations went to Charity du Jour that night, and we raised $1,453 for the food bank, which equals 5,800 and change meals.
Jesus.
That brings our yearly total to $21,473.
God damn.
So
is that our biggest Charity du Jour of the year? At 1400?
1453, yeah, that's our biggest one of the year, and 21,473 is officially crossed what we raised last year, so the most we've ever raised in 1 year.
Congratulations, everybody.
Nice.
It is amazing. Nice. I mean,
yeah, it's phenomenal.
I mean, yeah, we're a bunch of drunken idiots and we do stupid things and say stupid things. And but at the, you know, when you're looking at it, nobody else is doing this in this league.
Yeah. And just to carry on, the next home game, September 8th, like I mentioned, Marfan will be the charity. If you don't know, Marfan syndrome is something that affects a lot of taller people. Our very own Jack Burton, who
is Lennon McGuire. all his pseudonyms.
Yeah. He's like 6'11", and that...
He says he's 6'11", but his wife says he's 7 foot.
He's very tall. But sometimes when people grow that tall, they have some other problems, and he had to have an open heart surgery this year. He's had surgeries in the past for different things. So Marfan syndrome, it's not a lot of people know about it, but it does affect a lot of people, and it hits close to home because one of our own has it. So that's what we're going to do our charity du jour for.
And Lennon's one of those guys too. It, you know, it affects the heart, but none have a bigger heart than him.
Oh, so cheesy.
How about that?
One of the first soccer guys I met in St. Louis.
Yeah, he was one. I mean, so that was where I was headed with this, is that he's one of those guys that really helped bridge the American Outlaws St. Mm-hmm. Louis into being Luligans.
Yeah.
That he came out, had a good time with us, and, you know, he started bringing more of the Outlaws with him. So
I met them in KC at a U.S. game, and we were just hanging out, talking. And
it's easy to spot him in a crowd.
Drinking. Well, he came with the Dave Corbett. Here's the thing, right? We all went on the bus, right? The AO bus, and we stayed in the hotel, went to the night before party, and then we all piled into Target for the game, and we all got our beer at the Target and walked over to the tailgate, and we sat there drinking, and then you realize you can drive home still because it's Kansas beer and it's 3%. So Jack Burton and Dave Corbett show up, and they bring Craftig. And we fell on that like vultures onto a carcass, man. And I didn't know.
An extra 2%.
I didn't know that they were from St. Louis at the time. And then the next watch party, they were there. And, you know, Jack and Dave were the first two soccer guys I met in St. Louis. So I got a lot of time for Jack.
So that will be September 8th. And in addition, we're going to do something new. We're going to try something fun. I hope it's fun.
We got a monkey.
No, we did not get a monkey.
Damn it.
They're going to open the tailgate a little bit early. So it's going to be open at 5.
Ooh.
So it's a half hour earlier. So you can come a little earlier. You can drink a little more. You can eat a little more. Hang out. But we're also encouraging to bring the kids. And this goes not just for the people to sit in our section, but for people who sit all over the stadium. We're going to have some art supplies. We're going to have a poster board, and we're going to have markers.
It's like Bohoy's Arts and Crafts time?
It is. It's based on the Bohoy's work, where they make signs for every game. This is just an opportunity for your kid to come down, make a little sign. He can either make a sign for his favorite player, or make just a sign for the team, or his favorite drummer. He can make a sign to celebrate a goal. We're going to have markers. We're going to have poster board. We'll have some stencils down there.
No glitter.
No glitter, because, you know, parents hate it when the kids get in the car after being glittered. And also, parents can come down and make a sign, too. But I don't know, if you sit somewhere else in the stadium, bring your kid, bring it down to the tailgate. It is family friendly. I know we drink a lot of beer, but there's a lot of kids that come to the tailgate.
They don't drink a lot of beer.
They don't, no. We wouldn't let them. That's our beer.
That's right. We're selfish.
But you can make a sign. Help your kid make a sign. We've got some artists in the group who will be down there. If the kids want to draw something, maybe need a little help, they can help.
Don't take suggestions from the boys.
No.
Let them do their own thing.
The boys said they were going to bring a duck stencil in case the kids wanted to tell somebody to duck off. But I think that's probably going to get nixed. But I don't know. Just something a little fun. We want to spread some cheer around the stadium. And
if you want to put jorts on your kid and have them go full Bohoy, that would be cool. Awesome.
Yeah, you could be honorary Bohoys for the night, or Gahurls.
Gahurls. Give them maybe, you know, give them like some lime Kool-Aid or something like that instead of a Bud Light Lime.
We'll have some stickers for the kids that say, you know, I'm a Luligan or whatever, and they can wear those and just have a good time. So feel free to come down to the tailgate and have some fun with us on September 8th. The Reno game.
Reno.
There wasn't a lot of news in and around the league. I've just got a few stories to hit, but probably the most important one, our friend Will Oler. I don't know if you remember. We brought a bunch of soccer balls and tried to help him give soccer balls to cancer kids. Will is still battling cancer. He's bravely battling it, still getting chemo. But he started his first high school soccer game the other day. His first game he's played in 15 months.
Jesus.
And he helped Lindbergh win 1-0. He got a clean sheet.
Damn.
So
sign him up.
That is, I mean, that's impressive, because if you follow that page, you see what he goes through.
Yeah, his mom will post pictures of him hugging porcelain, you know.
Yeah, just the chemo is just, it's
brutal.
It literally destroys your body. That's what its job is to do.
Yes, it's to destroy cells.
Yeah, and so the fact that he's able to practice a little bit and get out there and actually play a game and get a clean sheet on top of it all, just amazing.
And it still wasn't that great of weather on Monday, too.
No, so it was,
To be out there in that weather with that battle behind him, that's amazing.
So I know soccer inspires him to keep going. It's the reason he fights so hard. It's the reason he wanted to raise the soccer balls for charity and everything. Just a really good story for a really, really good kid. So I know there's a couple games coming up. We're probably going to tweet out when they are, because there might be an opportunity for the Luligans to go see Lindbergh play.
That'd be great.
It would be great. I guess the biggest story of the week was Clint Dempsey retired. Maybe the best American player ever.
Greatest meme face of all time.
Deuce face, yeah.
The day after Donald Trump held up a U.S. soccer shirt is the day he decided to retire.
I don't know if there's a connection, but there might be.
Coincidence, I think not.
But, I mean, he's had a really good career. He went over to England when it wasn't, there weren't a lot of Americans going. MLS was already big. He'd kind of made his name here. He could have stayed here. At the Revolution. He could have stayed here and had a comfortable career, but he pushed himself and he went to Fulham, and he had a few really good years in Fulham. Ended up coming back. Did he go to Tottenham 1 year or two?
Yeah, but it didn't really work out for him at Tottenham. Then he went to Toronto. Yeah. Seattle. He was holding out for... Remember, he went on strike at Fulham.
Yeah.
He was holding out for a move to Liverpool, and Liverpool were like, we've not bid for you.
Yeah, one of the darker chapters, but...
he's constantly trying to better himself. You know, that's just him in a nutshell.
Pushing himself. That's his thing.
Rapping.
There's a lot of love for Landon, obviously, yeah. But...
Landon accomplished more with the national team, for sure.
But Dempsey was the boy, man. I think there's kind of a yin and a yang there. Landon was the clean-shaven, nice, all-American, cornbread-fed white boy.
Yeah.
Whereas Dempsey was this mean, nasty,
chip
snarly,
on his shoulder. Yeah.
Chip on his shoulder from the mean streets.
Like to take people
Texas
one-on-one.
And rapping. And...
Yeah, he...
Well, and I think, you know... To that point, there have been American players who are really good. You know, you think of Eddie Lewis, you think of Claudio Reyna, you think of Brian McBride. Casey Keller. These guys that went over there, but they were just sort of workmanlike. You know what I mean? They did a job. Deuce was one of our first flashy players to go overseas.
We're very good at producing goalkeepers.
Yeah.
We're very good at producing the odd midfielder, defenders. You know, even Gooch played for AC Milan.
Right.
You know, we were very good at... Dempsey was the first real out-and-out goal scorer that the U.S. exported, in my opinion. And
just, like I said earlier, to take a guy on. You know what I mean? He didn't just find spaces. He made things happen. And just was fun to watch.
And that the run that they had with Fulham to the UEFA Cup final, where they beat Juventus and they got beat by Atletico Madrid in the final, Fulham will never have days like that again.
Yeah.
You know, they will never have days like that again.
Sorry, Stuart.
Well, you know, but all right, they're back in the Premier League, but they ain't getting to the UEFA Cup final anytime soon.
It's a different league.
Yeah.
It's just they'd have to have a massive cash infusion.
And he was the man. Dempsey was the guy. I mean, I think he's the only American to score in 3 World Cups, right?
Sounds right. Be. I don't know.
I mean, that's that
but he produced. That's the thing. Whenever, wherever he was, he produced. Yeah. I mean, that's the be all end all. Whenever, you know.
And he had a little swagger to him.
A lot of swagger.
You know, but he had a dark side as well. He, you know, remember him grabbing the referee's notebook in the Open Cup and tearing it up and stuff like that. The deuce face. And yeah, he was a really, really good player. And the U.S. needs to produce more of that.
Yeah.
And one a generation ain't going to cut it.
No. But good career, pretty much liked by everybody, I think, and he will be missed. The next thing I have written down is Louisville got rolled by Toronto. I just want to make sure I said that again. And again, we joke, but Toronto has some decent players too. In fact, I don't think Louisville got a point off of them this year. I think Toronto tied them the other time they played them, didn't they?
Couldn't tell you. I mean, I look at the Eastern Conference results, and I watch a lot of Louisville games, not mainly because they're on at a decent time before we play, and we banter back and forth with their fans, and they got some good fans, and it's going to be it's going to be interesting to see how it goes with the new coach.
Yeah, I'm looking towards the off season to see what happens, but. I was a little shocked that they signed somebody before the off season. You know, I figured they'd wait to the off season to see who was available.
Yeah.
You know, but.
But if you think Hack was the man, then you go out and get him.
Yeah. And I mean, I know you joke a lot about him being a youth coach and, but I mean, he has a CV. He was with Philadelphia Union.
But as Taylor Sorrell says, if they're looking at starting an academy, that's the guy you want.
True.
And,
that was a true in stereo.
I know.
But it's just going to be interesting because I remember them jumping up and down with glee when they signed him, got this guy. And I'm like, that's very reminiscent of when we got Preki. and he, Louisville have been the model club for the last 4 years. And, you know, they're looking to continue that.
But their results haven't been great,
you know,
this season.
At home, since O'Connor left. I think they've won 1-6 at home.
Yeah.
Is there a way for them?
Which is, yeah, but that's shocking for Louisville. I mean, to be that far behind at home wins.
Uh-huh. But on the road, they...
take care of business.
They've been taking care of business. So,
but maybe the new coach doesn't like LARPing.
I don't know. It is what it is.
Maybe he hates playing on a baseball field.
Speaking of new coaches, John Harkes is back.
Yeah, Greenville Triumph is their name. It's a USL D3 club.
Sounds like a motorbike.
Yeah.
yeah, I don't know what to say. I mean, I've been, you know, casually keeping an eye on D3 and what's going on.
It just seemed kind of weird to me. Like,
well, as I said, the only thing I can think of is that he lives in the area because I know his son went to Wake Forest, and maybe the Carolinas is where they
that's
live.
That's probably a good point.
What I was thinking is when he left Cincinnati, there were rumors that he was kind of a figurehead and he didn't do a whole lot. Now, he did have a good first year with Cincinnati, but people were saying that others were doing the work. So maybe this D3 job is a way for him to prove that he's, you know, the real deal and work his way up. Right. I mean, you didn't hear his name come up when any other coaching job opened up.
Yeah, I mean, it's been off the radar. Agreed.
So, rumor or word must be that he's not, you know, at this level. I mean, think he would be a name that would pop up?
But well, I agree with you. I mean, he didn't. He had the league's biggest budget, league's biggest splash, the league's biggest attendance, the league's biggest stadium, the league's biggest this, that, the other.
As soon as the season was over, they brought in Koch immediately, who we all knew was a head coach. In fact, when Cincinnati hired him, we all kind of went, why would he go be an assistant coach? Well, then a month later, he was the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
So
they had to know something was up there.
Yeah. So either Cincinnati decided that or who knows.
Well, but I also think Harkes and Birding had a little power tussle between them and... You know, you ain't going to win that battle against the GM.
Harkes having a power battle with somebody?
Well, also Birding. You know, he seems to be that type, too.
Truth. Yeah. Truth, but it's not like we haven't seen that out of Harkes in his career.
I'm not going to say it.
There's a reason half our group is blocked from him on Twitter.
Yeah. We talk a lot about each week about the new teams that are coming in. We haven't talked really about the teams that are leaving other than the aforementioned Toronto. They're going to move down to D3. But this week, more speculation coming out about the Ottawa Fury and will they make the move to the new Canadian Premier League? I think they have to.
I mean,
I get it, but again, we talk about league stability. I would kind of want to stay here one more year if I was them, but
you kind of the league kind of needs them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a stable franchise with a stable fan
base. But I guess that's the point. The league hasn't really announced them yet.
The fans want to go to the Canadian Premier League.
Well, I think because they realize they could win it, and they're not winning anything if they stay in USL.
They're
pay attention. They've released like six guys.
Yeah, I saw that. Mm-hmm.
Weird there. I don't know if it's a money issue or maybe that's another reason they may want to go to Canada.
Those were six big.
A lot of them, yeah.
Signings that, what's his name, De Guzman?
Yeah.
Signed and...
Which they're still hanging out there in that eighth, ninth spot. They're still in with a shout for the playoffs, but there's weird things going on.
But the fans are like, we can go on away trips to Hamilton and all these...
Toronto
City.
And Montreal.
Well, and you got to think that if they move over as is, they're the favorites to win the league. I mean,
you'd have to think so.
Just because they're established and have been around. But I
wouldn't trust Ottawa to win anything. Yeah.
It's a big fish in a small pond, though,
so,
too.
Yeah.
But in theory, they should be a big fish in USL.
Yeah.
In theory.
That exchange rate hurts, though, I'm sure.
Maybe.
So it's just something to keep an eye on. You know, we always talk about, well, we don't know exactly how the league's going to shape out. We don't know how many teams we're adding. We don't know how many teams we're subtracting. And we're usually talking about MLS2 teams. Keep an eye on this one. We may lose Ottawa to the Canadian Premier League.
The fans want it, but apparently the front office are kind of hedging their bets a bit. They see USL as the stable thing, too.
Yeah. And then the only thing else I wrote down is we talked a little bit about it last week, and then he keeps putting his foot in his mouth. Alexi Lalas, again, you know, trying to find some sort of ground where he still supports MLS completely but doesn't piss off all the fans, and he's really doing neither. This week his big idea was Precourt should just buy Columbus a USL expansion team.
I actually said that last week. I said that, you know, maybe Austin Bold would look at Columbus, you know, and
That's different than
I agree.
Than Alala saying, oh, he should buy one for them. $7 million, yeah, it gets you the rights to a team, but it doesn't buy a team. You still got to build the team.
And Columbus don't want a pity fuck from Precourt.
No, they don't want anything from Precourt. I don't want anything associated with him.
You know, so, but...
I
think your point last week of saying if you've been a diehard Columbus Crew fan for 10 years and they leave, you know, in the middle of the night, they pull a Baltimore and they leave in the middle of the night, wagons roll, and this other team comes in to take their place.
Here's your consolation prize. Yeah.
You're gonna think twice. You're going to be like, that's not my team.
I think they at least need to leave.
They could name it the Columbus Pre-Cunts.
I think they at least need to give it a year or two, you know, and then maybe bring it back. Maybe MLS does the right thing, gives them the crew name, because don't forget, MLS owns all that intellectual property and everything. Maybe it can be, but I think it's too soon. One good thing that Alexi Lalas said was MLS needs to quit fucking around, rip off the Band-Aid, quit taking pre-orders for season tickets in Columbus if you know they're not going to be there.
Correct.
Because yeah, that's
shady.
Shitty. Yeah.
I will say that I presume we'd have zero Columbus Crew fans that listen to us, but I will say this. Guys, if you end up with a team in USL, don't turn your nose at it, because it's a good league and it's a fun league.
Yeah, and I mean, despite what the NPSL Pro and the NISA people say...
It's a fun league.
It's fun.
It's a fun league. We have fun with it, and you know, if you get a team and you can emotionally attach yourself to it, and then you start going to Louisville, and you start going to Indianapolis, and Pittsburgh's not far away, and neither's Harrisburg, and Richmond's just over the mountains. You can go to a lot of games, and it's fun.
Well, and let's add to the fact that the recent teams that have moved up, and I'm thinking of Orlando, and I'm thinking of even Portland and Seattle back when they moved up from USL, a lot of these fans say they had more fun in USL.
Oh, yeah, the ruckus down in Orlando. Some of them regret moving to MLS.
I mean, obviously the soccer's not quite at the same level, but the rules on the supporters are more in our favor. I think the league caters to fans a little more than MLS does. Mm-hmm. Especially,
that's not saying much.
Well, yeah, especially what we're seeing around the league with that. But, yeah, it's you can have a damn good time.
You try going to an open training session at Sporting KC. Yeah. You can't do it.
Well, and to the point that, you know, a lot of us have – you were always like this, Matt, but a lot of us, after the whole MLS thing failed, we're just like, good. Let's forget about it. Let's enjoy what we have. We don't have to worry about our season tickets going up double. Mm-hmm. We don't have to worry about, you know, all the stuff that comes with MLS. We can keep doing our thing and having a fun time. So,
but I also look at Ewan now. And I saw Ewan's face when he first walked into Sporting KC's Mercy Park, and his like face was like just a gape, but like, look at the stadium. You know, so there is a little bit of that, that it's not, it wouldn't be my MLS team, but it sure would be Ewan's.
Yeah.
You know, it's and you know, it was a bit, the vote was a little bit of sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Ewan gets to hang out with his boys after the game.
Yeah,
there would never be
striker holding him over the boards and taking him out there to dance. And
you know, I feel bad because like this, I know there's other parents out there that want to put their kids over the boards, and Mark shouts at them. But I have never put Ewan over the board. Someone's grabbed him.
Dequa grabs him. Lewis grabs him. I mean,
player grabbing.
As long as I will not put him on the field because that's not right. But if someone else grabs him and takes him, then that's fair game in my opinion.
And you get a chance to run away and not be in charge of your kid for a while.
All right, let's do the poll question, and then we'll do some comments and questions. This week, we just asked very simply, will St. Louis FC make it to the playoffs for the first time in their history this year? And if not, why not? 74% of our listeners think, yes, they will make the playoffs. They are optimists.
Good.
4% say no, they're not going to make the playoffs. And 22% probably the right answer, too early to tell. I'm in the yes category. I think they will end up getting enough points to get into the playoffs.
I agree. I voted yes. I was in the yes camp. I think we're playing well. I do think it's too early to tell for sure, obviously, because we're in eighth. But I think we're playing well. I think we're playing better than the teams around us. It's going to be a battle. I think we're going to finish sixth, seventh, or eighth, and we'll, you know, our first playoff game is going to be somewhere awful like Salt Lake or Orange County.
Yeah.
But you know.
But I'll still be looking at flights.
You know what? 2 years ago, we were looking at finish second bottom of the West to Tulsa. So,
right.
You know, hope springs eternal. I mean, maybe it's a little optimist.
Quite honestly, the only wrong answer is no.
I mean,
because that's just being a miserable fuck.
But I get that people are
that's
a little
being
bit
jaded. But if that's the case, you're not watching what's going on right now.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to just flat out say there's no way in hell.
You know what? If we finish ninth and miss out by a point on the last day,
yeah,
I'll be devastated. Yeah. Honestly, I'll be devastated. But I've seen enough this season to know that we're heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know, you can't climb Mount Everest, you know, in a single day. It takes a while. So, and I'm happy that we've moved above base camp now, at least. You know, we're scaling the peak.
Let me read some comments, and you can comment if you wish. The St. Louis FC fan van says, all depends on these next 7 days. We've got three matches. Well, now there's two left. One against bottom feeder Seattle, two against playoff rivals. Bare minimum, we should get 5 points this week if we want a spot in the playoffs. I think that's right. I think, I mean, obviously I would have liked to have gotten three the first game, but I still think we can get a win and a draw out of the next two.
I think having one of those games be at home is a huge plus because they are playing very well at home.
Yep. Michael Decker says, I think we will finish with the 7 or 8 seed. I'm thinking we're going to end up facing either Real Monarchs or Phoenix Rising in the first round. Yeah, that's, I mean, again, Job one, make the playoffs.
Job one, make the playoffs, yeah.
Job two, yeah. It's, whoever we play is going to be a tough game.
And in a one-off game, anything can happen.
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely convinced with our away form this year. Obviously, I mean, you just look at yesterday. You can look at the Vegas result. But in a one-off game, anything can happen.
Yeah.
And the way we're playing right now, I'll take our chances.
Oh, yeah. Don't for 1 minute think that they're going to have an easy game if they get us in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
They're going to have to battle for it.
Here you go. Drummer Zach is maybe one of the negatives. I want to believe, but I just don't believe we can win away from home enough, what Matt just said, to keep above. I hope I'm wrong, but I see us missing out in ninth. Non sequitur Wallfall is a beast. He and Lewis owned the middle of the pitch for about 60 of the 90 last night.
That is truth.
Yeah, that, I have no argument with that. Zach is one of those guys who has put his heart on the line a lot, and he's been stepped on, and I think he's just not ready to believe.
And you know what? If that's the case, that's fine, because I see Zach putting his heart out there every game.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, I'll give him the pass. Yeah. He's earned it, and he is. He's done everything to make it happen. So if they do, it's not going to be because Zach isn't doing 100%. Drummers win games.
That's right.
But you know what? Zach's opinion, he is, as you said, Mitch, he is there every game.
But again, he is doing something every game.
You know, and
he's gutted when we lose, and he's elated when we win.
He watches every game, and he sees what we see, and if he's still not entirely convinced, that's his opinion. Yeah.
He's still got my vote for Hooligan MVP.
It's not that I agree with Zach, but I'm saying if we finish ninth, I've seen enough to think we're doing all right. Not that we're doing all right, but marked improvement over seasons past.
Well, I mean, Ryan mentioned it on the field the other night after the win against Tulsa. First time we've put up 10 wins on a season.
Yeah,
so
still got a quarter of the season to go.
We have advanced past, you know, previous seasons, which the previous three may as well have been carbon copies of each other record-wise.
Yeah.
We're making some progress.
I'll take it all day long.
Gare Bearer says he looks at it as what two or three teams will finish the season strong enough to knock us out. Barring any complete collapses, we've got this. So, yeah, he's looking at teams like San Antonio, like Swope. You know, do they have what it takes to beat us going down the stretch? Can they win more than we can? And I'm with him. I think
that the home game we've got against San Antonio is going to be massive. If we can take three there, that all but gives us enough space over them.
Yeah. And he also says he's still rocking the OG red collar jersey. Told himself he wouldn't buy a new jersey until they make the playoffs, but now he's setting aside some money. Alexander Orr, he says, ask me after the Pacific Northwest trip. I think that's fair. It is a little early to say yes. So I guess the question back for Alex is, would 4 points be enough? Would 2 points be enough out of this trip? What's he need? I'm not, even if we lose against Portland, I'm still not thinking we're out of it, but I think we definitely have to win either Portland or Reno.
If we come away from to the Pacific Northwest with just 1 point, I would class that as a bit of a downer.
Yeah, but not out.
No, because
it just means that you really have to win against Reno then.
Yeah, that's why I see
you don't want to put that kind of pressure on yourself, because we've seen what happens with that in the past.
Yeah, you don't want to have a start in must-win games.
Yeah. Perhaps the dumbest reply we had, Precky's head said, if the coach brought the right players on this road trip, maybe. this guy, you know, he commented on Twitter and on Instagram. He must be a friend of Austin Ledbetter's, and is disappointed that his buddy didn't make the trip to Seattle. You're not a fan of the team, obviously. He's just a fan of Austin Ledbetter, which is fine, but I don't really care.
That's just,
and again, no offense to Austin. I like Austin. He wasn't the difference in last night's game. Yep. You know, I mean, so you're just a fan of Austin. You're not a fan of St. Louis FC.
Bye.
Kiss my ass. And then now for questions and comments. We don't have very many. Jake from St. Farm says, talk about the goal that wasn't a goal.
At the time, I was like, that's an effing goal.
Yeah, so it was strange because the announcers immediately started talking about it, saying that...
This is the Seattle game, for those of you who don't know.
The announcers started talking immediately, saying something to the effect of, is that he was trying to get a quick start and trying to get a foul on our guy for not giving distance, and the ref wasn't having any of that.
Yeah.
And then Mark Gardner of your electric... Our referee, and we got to have him on to talk about rules at some point.
We will, I promise.
Yeah, but thank you, producer. But so he immediately came out and said, you know, yes, that may have been what he was trying to do, but the rule is basically if you play it, you know, play the quick ball, it's live. So it should have been a goal.
There was one comment on Twitter about it, and I'm trying to find it right now.
And also, while we're talking about that too, incredibly disappointed that we get a corner at the end of the game and the referee blows the whistle.
I'm all right with that. I'm all right. Listen, the referee can't add on time just because you're attacking.
Yeah.
It's just that it's sour grapes. Yeah. 90 minutes plus stoppage time, the whistle blows. It was 94 and a half minutes.
They usually wait till it's kicked back out to midfield before they blow the whistle.
And let's be honest.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying usually.
The way their goalie was futzing with the ball every time, you can easily add on the 20 seconds it's going to take to put the kick.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of, again, letter of the law, but it was kind of shenanigans.
We raced up for a throw-in. He could have blew before the throw-in all I was aware. And
I don't know. I mean, again.
What if it had gone out and got another? What if we would have got 4-5 corners in a row? I mean.
No, you're right, but.
I know I'm right. That's why I said
it. But we've also been screaming before when we need that game to be over.
Yes.
And they keep letting them have another corner. Or they keep letting them have the free kick or whatever. Blow the fucking whistle.
It usually goes the way you don't want it to. That's the be-all, end-all of it. It almost always goes the way you don't want it to. I'm trying to give you time to find a bird.
Did you find your tweet, Bird?
No, I didn't. I think it was a guy called Matt Heilick.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said if a free kick in the penalty box, the ball has to leave the penalty area before it's classed as live. I don't know. I didn't look at the rule, but... That might just be for goal kicks.
But that would be... No, that'd be, have to be... That's goal kicks. Because
I think a goal kick has to leave it.
Yeah, because I see that in the youth league, and I've looked it up, where it has to be outside the box before it's live.
Yeah.
But on a free kick, you're taking a free... Because even if it was a free kick anywhere, it doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with it.
As far as I was aware, the ball just has to make one revolution.
Yes.
Before it's live.
Yes.
To me, it was... As soon as I saw it, I'm like, that's a goal.
But we've all seen games where... The players try to take a quick free kick, and sometimes the refs allow it, sometimes they don't, and it just really just seems to be totally at the ref's discretion.
I think a lot of it is whether or not the ref has felt that the... Because this was something that I did see in a unrelated game where it came up, and the discussion was if the ref feels that he's addressed this foul situation, if he's done addressing the foul situation... Then he lets it go. But if he feels it isn't, that's when he calls it.
There is a thing in soccer called the offender can't be offended against.
Yes.
And if our guy was intentionally not 10 yards away, then even though it was a stupid quick free kick that could have backfired, technically our guy was not in the right position. I looked at it. My first initial
gut reaction.
And I think
that's what he was trying.
My first initial gut reaction was, that's a goal.
Yeah.
Because you're a bonehead and you try to. You tried to be cheeky and play it off our guy, and it's backfired. My first reaction was it's goal.
Same. I think everybody was. And it sounds like the rule backs us up, but USL refs, this is what we deal with. It goes with us, it goes against us.
I also think the ref went for the easy out, because if it had given the goal, all hell would have broken.
Oh, absolutely.
He went for the easy option.
Zach wants to know, why did we refuse to shoot last night? Corey, Kadeem, Cox, and Martz, off the top of his head, all had shot opportunities, and they passed instead of ripping the shot. Is it possible we play too much like a team?
I felt like Corey had a few good shots. It was funny because for a while there, I was saying we were taking shots we shouldn't have, where we were just driving into guys' shins.
So, Adley Jepsen's not shy of taking a shot.
No, he is not.
And I think we went through some periods earlier in the year where we weren't shooting as much. Maybe there was a bit of that last night in the second half.
Man, but Cox cannot miss that header. How did he?
He had enough time to
he could have settled it.
Could have made a cup of tea. He had enough time. He could have settled it, chest it, smashed it. I mean, you just didn't know how much time and space he had, but you got to get it on frame at least.
Yeah, that hurt. I think that's the one that hurt the most because it was a gimme. I mean, he had the entire goal. He had everything, and he just
could have chested it down and put his laces right through that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, could have, would have, should have.
Yep.
This one will be for you two because I know a new article came out in The Athletic. It's a new subscription sports.
I've actually got it pulled up here so we can discuss it.
Jim Bellinger wants to know, does St. Louis FC pay for their players' insurance? This was an article all about the growth of the league and maybe some of the things we're not doing that we need to start addressing, pay for players and benefits and things like that. So I didn't read the article. You guys read the article. Let me know what's going on.
So this article came out today, and for those that don't know The Athletic, it is fantastic. If you enjoy hockey, if you enjoy baseball, they have some of the best staff writers there for each area. You know, like the St. Louis, like Jeremy Rutherford, who used to be with the Post and bailed on that sinking ship. He does amazing work. They get a little bit more flexibility because they can basically write what they want.
Yeah.
So he can write a 5-page article if he wants now because he can do whatever the hell he wants. And Jeff Reuter wrote an article, came out yesterday, growth of the USL puts low pay, lack of insurance for players under greater scrutiny. And it is a very good article. Our own Jeremy Allenbaugh is talked to in it because they bring up the Wiz Khalifa situation. And
Kuzain.
Yeah, Wayne Kuzain. I'm still calling him Wiz Khalifa.
Yeah.
Where Sporting was able to get him for nothing, basically take him, steal him from us for nothing and give him a homegrown designation. And you know, they touch on everything there. They touch on that. They touch on, you know, players literally having dollar contracts with performance bonuses put in because you have to have a guaranteed contract, it says. They talk on the Tommy Heinemann situation, how that is awful. Evidently, that is in arbitration this week and next, so we should hear something about that coming out. But the big part that has talked about it a lot is basically the compensation and the living. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago with the Women's League having issues, and essentially this article says that we're barely any better in the USL. Some situations are better than others. You know, a senior contract in MLS makes you $65,000, but if you're playing for Toronto and the coach gives you Monday after a game off, you don't get paid for that day. They literally have timesheets, an Excel spreadsheet that they have to, game is 4 hours. This training is this, you know, they have a key that they have to register their time against.
That one surprised me, the whole timesheets things, because I would have imagined the contract is you get paid X amount for the season. I mean, when we had Jacob Bashu on here, he was talking about how the first year Jacob was here, he was on an 8-month contract for the season, and then he'd renegotiated to be spread out further around the year, so he was still getting paid during the off season.
Well, and that was also with NASL versus USL. At one point, I think USL players got paid per game and NASL players got paid per month, or maybe it was the other way around, but one league would throw in extra games on there, you know, friendlies and such, but the players wouldn't get paid anymore. Uh-huh. And the other league, oh no, if we play another game, we get paid, you know, however much.
In fact, Tyler David is interviewed in this, which was kind of interesting because he points and the statement he makes is very odd because he says that he was driving Uber in the off season, but it gave him something to do in between games. So was he driving during the season? Not, you know, the statement was very weird. But that kind of shows, you know, here's a guy that went to college at SLU, is familiar with the area, but is picking up Uber hours to have extra money.
And we know a lot of the guys, they take on a coaching gig with Gallagher
or with a local high school. And how there's not a lot of those opportunities because you already have people like us taking a lot of those.
But which is also one of the benefits for St. Louis FC having Scott Gallagher, it does give a few more things for people to do.
Yeah, and
ways for them to make a little extra money.
And Tyler even talks about several situations that I doubt the front office is happy with some of the things he says here. Maybe they are. Maybe they don't care. But, you know, like how they're looking for midseason guys, and basically it came out of the coaching stipend.
Yeah.
To get a player, and you know, some of these guys weren't making squat, but the article also goes on to say that's their choice to make. If you want to play, if you want to play and you're not good enough to be on a guarantee or, you know, on a full blown contract, well, that's what you have to do. It talks about NASL going, you know, there's a good chunk of this article that talks about NASL going away and the things that we've talked about on this show where when that league went away, here comes 30, you know, 25 times eight guys that are looking for jobs. And, you know, they talked to one player who was on $100,000 a year with an NASL team. And I, if I remember correctly, and I may be misquoting it, but that same team went to USL, which narrows it down to like three or four teams. Yeah. And they basically said, well, we can only pay you $50,000 now.
Yeah.
And, you know, because that's, it's a different league. The revenues are different. And, you know, he said he has a family of four, and that's a significant chunk of change. And, and just, you know, that, you know, the insurance isn't there. And there is a couple teams that do pay for health insurance. And I do think that most of the teams, if I remember correctly, if it's something that happens during training, they cover it.
Right.
So,
but if you've got a wife and kids, they may not pay for your family.
And that was, and that was one of the things that they said where, you know, this one player, his wife stayed in California just because California has a socialized healthcare system that she could be a part of.
Yeah.
And that a lot of the younger guys that are under 26 through the ACA stay on the mom and dad's insurance because it's, you know.
Did it also, you know, obviously I didn't read the article. You did.
No, that's good.
You know, when Sean was here, Sean talked about his experiences just 5-6 years ago where he wasn't getting paid at all, basically.
Oh, it talks about
but
that.
But does it talk about how there have been improvements in USL?
Yes, there is. And that's the thing, too.
I mean, yes, it's still not where we want it to be. Obviously, there's a lot of bad situations out there, but there is an improvement.
And that's the one thing that it does hit on pretty well, is that it makes a statement of basically a lot of it is situation to situation. Some are better than others.
Yeah. Obviously, the Cincinnati players are getting paid much more.
But, well, it's funny you say that, because there is a couple paragraphs about Cincy, especially with the Heinemann deal, that there's a lot of agents and players and other teams watching Cincy very, very closely because they're going to MLS.
Yeah.
So what kind of shit are they going to try to pull before they go? And B, what kind of fault, you know, we've talked about it on the show that they're kind of, I don't want to say reckless, but they'll have a depth of six strikers because they can.
Yeah.
And those guys are pissed off. Yeah. And
well, and they
that
also
has a lot of, there's a butterfly effect.
And
to
we
that.
Know performance incentives are used a lot in this league. Those guys might make a lot of money if they hit all their achievement bonuses, but if they're not playing because there's three other forwards ahead of them in the roster,
oh, they broke the leg,
they won't they won't get their bonuses.
Yeah, and like Tyler, I know some teams that would sign goalkeepers from within their market and pay them $250 a month. You know, they'd end up living at home or on their friends, but it was a much cheaper choice than signing three real goalkeepers. And I'm sure that does happen, but yeah. You know, again, if you're a third string goalie, that's kind of market rate. I mean, I'm not being, you know, this is part of the problem with a D2 is that you're not MLS. You're not, there's not the revenue there to offset it.
I just read a book, and it's funny. I nearly mentioned this to you the other day, Mitch, because I just read a book called Pro Cycling on $10 a Day by Phil Guymon. And Phil Guymon was a journeyman cyclist around the U.S. domestic scene. He eventually got a contract for a year with Cannondale, but he worked for nothing. He worked for nothing in Jelly Belly and all these other local teams around the U.S. And he would basically finish his ride with Jelly Belly, and then he would drive to New York, and he'd be in a crit in New York just for the $300 prize money and drive back. Once you scratch away from the elite of sports, this is how it is.
Yeah.
Once, for every Michael Jordan that's standing on a stage saying, you practice hard and you can be whatever you want to be, there's 30,000 guys that worked hard that just didn't make it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is how it is.
Well, now, yeah, I'm sure if you look at the NBA D League, I'm sure their pay isn't a lot higher than...
It might be a little bit different just because it's a smaller roster size, so I think they might spread...
But now, what he said, though, Guyman, and this is probably happening in soccer, was that in a cycling team, they'll have two guys, two team leaders, on six figures, and everyone else cycling for twigs and shit, and it's their job to make the guys making money look good.
Right.
And in soccer, what you can't have is two forwards or two guys making great money and everyone else making peanuts. You can't have that.
That was the Beckham scenario.
Yeah, if you've got a team like Penn FC where everyone's scratching for a living, everyone's fighting, everyone's snarling and fighting to get up the ladder, and they're all in the same boat, you can kind of get to grips with that. But if you've got one guy making 150 grand,
Tommy Heinemann,
and other guys only making 500 a month, you're going to have discord in the dressing room.
But part of that is too, and this is something, you know, it's been a conversation piece, and this is the other thing. It's just soccer in America. It's not the NBA. It's not Major League Baseball. It's not the NFL. The revenue isn't there coming.
Yeah, a lot of MLS guys are just barely making ends meet too.
Yeah, I mean, and it says in here that the base, I think, for MLS was like for a senior player, which I imagine is a designation after you've been was like 65 grand a year.
Yeah. I think rookies can still make in that 35 grand.
Right.
And if you're in San Jose, that's different than if you're in Columbus.
Absolutely. Right. And that's one of the things this says here is that, you know, the 25th player on a lower tier roster isn't going to warrant a salary above 35,000.
Yeah.
And we just mentioned him, so I'm going to pick on him for that purpose. Austin Ledbetter didn't make this trip. And there are several guys that didn't make this trip. Do they warrant, you know, when you have a limited budget, you know, paying him 35 grand a year versus maybe not getting a Corey Herzog on your team or a Wall Fall, is that a fair trade-off? You know, and the big thing that is said here in this roster is that there are hundreds upon hundreds, really, let's say thousands, maybe even millions of people around this country, around the world, that would be happy to take his spot for that pay.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the hard part.
And we definitely talked about that when we were losing some of our players last year, you know, whether it was a Dragon or a Tyler David, somebody we all really liked. Whenever we saw the NASL guys coming in, we just said there's going to be a glut of players and you can't keep them all, you know. And it might have come down to, well, if Tyler stayed, he would want this much, and we can get one of these guys now for less because that's what the market will bear.
I also think that the U.S. is in a very, very enclosed bubble in the fact that you can't just go and get a work permit and go move to Holland and try your hand there.
You're right.
You know, it's very difficult for U.S. players at this level to go to France, to go to Germany. You know, so Tyler's gone to Finland and he's taking a punt on the fact that the ceiling there is so much higher. He may not be getting paid as much in Finland as he did here, but the ceiling's higher. If he puts in the work and if he puts in the performances,
he
could maybe get looked at by a Norwegian team and then a Danish team. Right. And then, you know, never know. Brian Gall's playing third division German ball, you know, but the ceiling is a lot higher there. So, but it's very difficult to get those work permits to the EU. So they're kind of trapped in this system.
Well, but it's funny you even mentioned it earlier with Jacob, and Tyler says it here about the eight month versus a 10 month deal, and Tyler flat out says I didn't read my contract.
Yeah,
I love Tyler. He's one of my favorites that we've had in here the past couple of years. But if you don't read your contract,
but a lot of kids coming out of college probably don't.
But I mean, because you're coming out of college, you're expendable, cheap,
and there's a new batch of them coming next year.
And it is no goddamn different in my job.
No, that's true.
You know, working in IT, you know, we're doing developer interviews up in our home office in Toronto today, and they just, you know, got rid of a couple of developers that were shit, and they made good money. I guarantee you, in that stack of resumes I have, there's probably 25 or 50. Fresh out of college kids that'll take a fraction of what that senior guy made and just to have that foot in the door.
And it's like you said, it's the same with every industry.
Yes.
You know,
So, you know, part of me says tough shit. Part of me says we do need to treat them better. And honestly, I think that is the focus of this article.
Yeah. I get it. Again, if everyone in the dressing room is in the same boat, you know, if everyone in Cincinnati is paid $100,000 and they're laughing and they've all got insurance for the families, then great. And if everyone in Penn FC is all struggling and $750 a month with housing, that's okay. Because essentially soccer is the haves against the have-nots.
And that is a good point, too, is that every statement in here brings up that the teams offer housing. Yeah, you may be sharing with another guy, and some poorer teams you may be sharing with four guys, but you're getting housing. And in some of these markets, like Orange County, that is a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, would you rather...
they have an apartment in East L.A.
Yeah. But that's the thing, you know, would you rather have the team paying for it?
Yeah.
Or would you rather be writing that check every month? And what happens if your roommate gets traded?
Yeah.
And you've got to find another guy? And maybe the guy they bring in doesn't need a place to live.
I think you just Airbnb it at that point.
Yeah. I mean, probably, and that probably gets you in trouble with the team. I mean, these are the things that happen.
What concerns me, and I go back to the Patrick Doody situation, is that we are forcing out promising young talent out of this game.
Yeah, you're right.
Because you look at Jamie Vardy, man. Jamie Vardy, when he was, let's say, Lewis Hilton's age, he was playing for Stocksbridge Athletic in the sixth tier of English soccer.
Yeah.
You know, and we're forcing talented young American pros out of this game. I don't know what the answer is, other than
it's just got to grow more. It's going to take time.
So that's a great transition.
Also, we got to pay more at the gate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the other, you know.
You know, I'm not being a...
I mean, that's the other thing, and Nipun and some of the other guys have brought this up. It's not like the owners are making bags full of cash and aren't sharing it with the players. Most of the owners in this league aren't making money.
And that's one of the reasons that there is such a stress on the academy idea now, because you can get those young players coming in that can stay at home that you can get. And you actually said something there, and it kind of actually brings into the...
But to me, that's cheap labor, man.
Sure it is.
That's cheap labor.
That's the point.
You know?
That's exactly the point.
What do you do then when you're 26? Then when you're out, when you're moving out of home, you want to get married.
But the thing is that in theory, the idea, it's no different than any other club in the world. You get these tons of the young kids. You see which ones pan out. You get paid for the ones that pan out.
You mentioned Patrick Doody, and I have no inside knowledge into Patrick's financial situation or anything like that. But we do know when he was a Chicago Fire player, he was getting the MLS contract.
Yeah, he was on $65,000 a year. Yeah.
Which I think he was a homegrown player, so it's a little different. It's a little bump for that, but whatever. He could play soccer and chase his dream at $60,000 a year. As soon as Chicago let him go, whatever St. Louis FC offered or any other USL team, he decided, I can't chase my dream for that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably making more. Well, I mean, I'm sure he's making more at whatever job he's doing now than he would as a second division U.S. soccer player. So, again, that you were saying, if a guy can hang with MLS long enough, he might be able to hit that, peak year like Vardy. But if they don't hang with MLS, if they can't catch on and get that MLS payday and get loaned down to the two team or loaned down to a whatever, it's awful hard for these guys to keep plugging away.
But what makes it different than baseball? Because,
it's different.
I'm just saying, this is a great story, but this is sports, though, in a way, too. That,
a lot of these baseball players get drafted by a big league team and get a nice signing.
What's different about it is, again, I go back to Europe. If a left back is cut from the Derby County reserve team, he can look at Switzerland, he can look at France, he can look at Spain, he can look at Portugal, he can look at Holland, he can look at Belgium. He's got all those options.
Sure.
But you, as an Patrick Doody, he's going to struggle to get a work permit to go and, have a pop at that.
Right. Oh, no, I agree.
And if he does, I don't know, in Canada still you have to have whatever, but even if he wanted to go play in the Canadian Premier League, they're going to have roster rules where they only allow three Americans whatever.
Exactly. No,
and I think...
And we have that too with the international...
Whereas Patrick may say, I can earn $30,000 a year at St. Louis FC, or I can earn $15,000 a year at Girona reserves in La Liga 2.
Yeah.
But the ceiling's higher, so if I play well, I can go.
Yeah.
But all right, where are you going to go from St. Louis FC? If you can't make it in MLS, where do you go from St. Louis FC? You're right. Stuck there. You hit that glass ceiling. And that's the thing that's the issue here.
But that's what I was saying, where it's like baseball. You know, you're a high school kid. Maybe you don't get drafted. They just sign you to a minor league contract because that's a majority of these kids. Yes, the really good ones get drafted. Tyler Davis was drafted, and he's driving an Uber. Yeah. You know, I mean, draft doesn't necessarily mean anything. But how many of these guys are riding buses from, you know, Springfield to, you know, Cape Girardeau for $200 a month, you know, playing baseball, and they hang on to it as long as they can, then they come home and start a family. It's not a lot of different across sports. I think the difference is that the standardization is better in those other sports. Because, and I think that's where, because soccer is still developing in this country.
Yeah.
I'll go back to the cycling thing. There are 400 guys in the domestic U.S. peloton. They all think they're going to get to the Tour de France.
Sure. Right.
One will make it.
Exactly. Right.
There are 3,000 minor league baseball players. They all think they're going to make it to the Yankees.
Yep.
One will.
Right, yeah. Right.
And you know,
and it's the same way with every sport. That is.
Yeah.
But the one thing that the article does close on, and I do think this is incredibly important because it ties into a lot of the things that we've been saying for a while here, but it takes it in a different way, is that with the expansion that's going on, yes, that means there's a lot more opportunities.
It dilutes the talent, though, too.
It dilutes the talent, but number two on that is that if essentially they're just churning out teams for the $7 million fee now. That if Wichita FC comes in, can't hang, and folds, they're just going to turn around and create Des Moines FC. Or, you know, there's another city to take their place. No. Yes, that will end at some point in time. But when you get into these expansions and these cities that think they can do it and make it happen, that there is going to be a problem coming up soon, you know, when you get to 39, 40, 60 teams. Of a lack of a standardization, and that's where there's going to have to be some serious changes as a league.
That, to me, again, I'm not putting my Ted tinfoil hat on, but if Penn FC can't hang in USL, what happens around the world is they drop down a division.
Absolutely.
It goes back to having an open pyramid.
But, yeah, and the problem is that they may not even be able to afford to do that because soccer just doesn't have that inroad yet.
I know.
You know?
We're not going to solve it all today.
Oh no, it's a great.
If you subscribe to the Atlantic, or
I think
the Athletic,
it's like $40 a year, or like $5 a month. If you're a Blues fan and you're not doing it,
yeah,
you're foolish.
Tonight, I'll post a link to the article on the St. Louis FC or the St. Luligan Twitter and the St. Luligan Facebook page, so you can click there, and right from when you click that, it kind of brings the first paragraph up and it allows you to subscribe. Yeah. So,
I really recommend people do it,
especially if you're a hockey or baseball fan, like you said.
But even their soccer coverage this year, I joined in the middle of last hockey season, and within the past 3 months, their soccer coverage, not only domestic but the foreign leagues as well, has really picked up. This article shows that they are even focusing on the lower league now too, as well. I think. You know, I'd like to see at some point in time this really pick up. And you're seeing people that maybe have toiled under the shitty newspaper system that we have in the United States who are getting a chance to write really good articles. I'm not saying that, you know, there's a chance for every fuck-up who thinks he's a journalist and gets a press pass to soccer games and sits in the press booth because he writes a blog.
Yeah.
No, you don't have a chance, but the real journalists who have put in their dues.
They don't take those kind of people. I try.
No, they don't. but that's my point. You know, they take some really good guys. So really, you know, support the arts.
Last thing I want to mention is season ticket renewals for 2019 will be going out soon. I like Matt said, I think we've all seen enough to know this ship is headed in the right direction finally. I'm anxiously looking forward to renewing my season ticket. We don't know what all the changes are going to be. We don't know exactly how much, if it's going to go up at all or if it's going to stay the same. But we do know 8 and 9 will officially be supporter sections, and they won't be listed as GA anymore. You will be buying a ticket in the supporter section, and the only people allowed in 8 and 9 will be people with those tickets. So it'll cut down on the family just buying the GA ticket and just
standing where the shoot boys go.
It's the cheapest ticket to buy,
yeah,
and then just ending up stuck in the corner with smoke and drums, and that's not what they wanted. So they're just going to make that a little bit more clear. So other than that, we don't know what else is going to come, but start checking your mailboxes. Those renewal stuff will be coming soon.
Can't wait to renew. Yep. Things are on the upswing.
Anything else, guys?
Oh, Maritza, they got a bye. The first qualifying round of the Open Cup was made this week, and they have got a bye.
Okay.
But there is every possibility that it could be a little St. Louis derby, maybe, if they go to the second round.
That would be fantastic.
I would love it. I'd love St. Louis FC at Parkway North. Come on. But good luck to Maritza.
I said this joke on Twitter, but that's just that's just too far to drive. People won't drive all the way to Parkway North to see a St. Louis derby. Are you fucking kidding me?
But so, good luck to them.
Yeah.
They had a really good season in UPSL.
They kind of got screwed a little bit with the playoff situation.
They did a bit, but I'm glad that they do have some reward for the season.
Yep.
And I'm going to really follow their Open Cup run and, you know, touch wood that they can really make a run in it.
It'd be fun.
It'd be great.
All right. Anything else?
See ya.
Been working in this factory for now for 15 years. All this time I watched my woman drowning in a pool of tears. And I've seen a lot of good folks die and a lot of bills to pay.